Welcome back. You're listening to Policy and Pino on Rhode Island Public Radio in concert with the beautiful Providence Athenaeum. I'm John Dankosky. I'm the executive editor of the New England News Collaborative, and I'm hosting this panel discussion about sanctuary cities. And we're talking with the mayor of Providence, Jorge Elorza, Deborah Gonzalez, who's an immigration law expert at Roger Williams University, Stephen Perry, who's Commissioner of Providence Public Safety, and Leanne Senek, Rhode Island Republican National Committee woman. In our last little segment, there's a lot that we haven't gotten to yet. One question I had for you, Commissioner, is we hear often from the president and from other supporters of measures like his executive orders that there's an awful lot of crime that is committed by people who are here in the country illegally. You can speak for many years working in the state of Rhode Island and also in Providence. Is there truth to that?
No.
Expand on your answer, please, sir.
So I've been in law enforcement nearly 37 years, and I can tell you the people that I've either arrested or managed overall, the small percentage are here, you know, undocumented overall. So I think there's a lot of fear, and my panelists here, you know, talked about what the state should be doing. Look, we shouldn't be talking about sending the police out to enforce these laws, because that instills fear, and that impacts our ability to police a city like Providence. So yes, there are bad people that come here from foreign countries to do bad things. And we don't want them here. We do everything we can, and we'll target them to deport them after they serve their time for criminal behavior. But the percentage is very, very small when you look at the overall picture of those who are committing crime. The discussion instills fear, and that's why I think we're having these conversations, that we shouldn't be using the strong arm of the law to go and enforce a policy that hasn't been followed in 3 decades, and now we have a problem with millions of people that are here for a very long time.
And Leanne, I want to have you jump in, but very quickly, Commissioner, could you just explain, though, the public safety imperative for you, what it means to have better communications with the community? I don't think everyone probably in our audience understands why it would be important for local police officers not to be involved in immigration enforcement.
So if we can't get the cooperation of our community, whether they're here documented or not, then we can't solve crime, because we can't be everywhere. And so we've been successful in Providence because we have the relationship with our community that they trust us. Not entirely. We work on it every day. But when you look at people that are here undocumented, that we don't know what their status is, nor should we, and now we approach that person, whether they're a suspect or they're a witness or they're a victim, they want nothing to do with the Providence police in the uniform, because they're thinking in their mind that they're here undocumented and that their lives are going to be disrupted, because we're going to be taking that person in, whether they're a witness, and we have a huge a challenge in getting people that are here undocumented that are victims of crime, even though there's protections and we can give them status when they're a victim of crime. Never mind witnesses. They want nothing to do with it because they're in fear of the police and what will happen to them.
Leanne, I knew you wanted to jump in. And
I just wanted to say that I think that we have, when we talk about enforcing laws, we talk about prevention. And when we look at the small percentage that you're talking about, it's also a small percentage of legal gun owners who commit crimes with guns. But we have that knee-jerk reaction every time that something happens, a bad thing happens that's related to mass shootings. And we enforce new laws. We institute new laws on local, state. We try to, we do, and we hurt people who are using those guns legally. And it's the same thing, that we don't want to have those kinds of knee-jerk reactions. And if you're looking from a business standpoint, when we run a business, we put controls in place. And those controls are in place not because we think that employees are stealing or that people are doing things they shouldn't be doing in those employments, but the controls are there to prevent those things from happening. And those are the same kinds of controls that we need to have in place for law and order.
We had been talking in the previous segment about some of the business aspects of this. Mayor, I guess I'm wondering if you have a sense of how important undocumented workers in the city of Providence are to the economy of your city?
I think they're tremendously important, but even more importantly, when you look at the national economy, you know, I've heard it suggested that, you know, if we had a very different immigration regime, we could be facing paying, you know, $4 or $5 for a head of lettuce. Mm-hmm. So never mind going to our restaurants, and who knows what the cost would be, but. You know, the produce that's produced in this country, it's mostly out in the West Coast, and it's produced by folks who are here temporary or migrant status. And so, you know, when you quantify the impact that immigrants have in our community in general, and in particular in our economy, it's hard to say exactly, but I would imagine that, you know, the impact is massive.
But I just want to break in.
Overwhelmingly, the impact is very positive.
I just want to ask you, though, I mean, Leon had mentioned earlier the question that many people have about people coming here, working under the table and working for very, very low wages. I mean, our head of lettuce that only costs a couple bucks, in part, is because somebody is picking that lettuce probably in California and getting paid almost nothing for it. And do we have concerns here on the East Coast, right, that we're paying a very little bit for what we're buying because somebody else is working very hard for almost no money somewhere else in the country?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Absolutely, that's a concern. There are a lot of ways to approach this. You know, from what I understand, you know, these are jobs that many of our folks, you know, simply aren't applying for and simply don't want to take. And so, if we were to remove these folks from the labor pool, would someone, you know, stand up and fill them? I'm not so sure, and I don't know. But you know what this comes down to for me as well is that, you know, we're in a completely new landscape when it comes to economic opportunity. You know, we live in a world right now that, you know, any kid or any person with a computer can start their own company and can, you know, have the next great idea. And having economic opportunities available doesn't necessarily mean taking someone else's job away. You know, when you look at the jobs that immigrants are performing, you know, they're starting their own jobs. You know, I would guess that even folks in this room that are landscapers. Mm-hmm. There are landscapers, perhaps have documents, perhaps they don't. We don't know, but people are entrepreneurial and they're filling in those spaces where, you know, folks, for some reason or another, they haven't applied or they haven't started businesses, and immigrants have been very, very successful of that, not just now but throughout all of history. You know, that's part of what makes immigrants so special, that immigrant spirit, that entrepreneurial spirit. And, frankly, that's something that we should celebrate and take advantage of.
Deborah, I've heard the number of 30,000 undocumented immigrants in this state. We don't know if that's the real number. Does that sound right to you, and how would we know?
It is. I think that's more of a guesstimate. Census came out, and the 30,000 undocumented people in Rhode Island is coming from the census that was done, I believe, in 2010. It could be more, because a lot of people, even at that time, I recall, were afraid to fill out the census for fear that information was going to be shared with immigration. So it's really unclear how many people are actually in the state of Rhode Island undocumented, but the guess based on the census numbers of 2010 are about 30,000.
So Leanne, when you hear some of these things, you know, the fear that people have about encountering a local law enforcement officer because they're worried that they might get turned over to federal officials, or even filling out a census form, it seems as though there's a lot of information that we could get, whether or not it's on public safety or even on how many people are living here, so we could do better economic analysis. Do you see something in that argument that there's a lot of fear amongst people who've maybe been here for decades living here illegally?
Well, I can understand the fear for people to not come out because of that, because they have been here illegally. But I think that we do need to get the accurate numbers so that we can plan, as the mayor, I'm sure, can attest to, you need to have resources for your city, and you need to know how many people are going to be using those resources, whether it's schools, hospitals, emergency services, all of those things. And you can't do that without that information from the census. But the idea that we should just let go of the idea of enforcing laws or enforcing immigration in legal ways because of that, at what point, again, do we draw that line? When does it become anarchy? When does it become, is it just open borders that we're in favor of at that point, that we think that anybody can just come and go? When we talk about people coming in and filling jobs that are migrant or temporary, there are visa programs for that, and those people can come and work in this country legally and come back and forth. There's a program in place for that. There are immigration laws and an immigration system that is in place. And by skirting that, we're doing a disservice to people who've come here legally, to the immigrants who are here being exploited, and to the citizens who are already here.
So just going on what Leanne is saying, and I have to admit, Leanne, I'm happy that you're here. And I am so happy to hear a lot of the things you're saying, because I don't think you and I think very differently. What I will say to your comment, though, in terms of the laws as they relate to migrant workers to come and do this work on a temporary basis, those visas are extremely difficult because, first, the employer has to be the person to pay all of the fees. And the fees could range upwards of over $1,000 to $1,500. For a six-month period, that means that employer needs to do that every 6 months. An application needs to go through the Department of Labor, which takes a very long period of time. And by the time the approval comes, that seasonal period has already ended. And so it becomes very difficult for employers to be able to obtain workers to do this work under these programs. What I agree with is that we need immigration reform. Because if we had immigration reform, then maybe it wouldn't be so difficult for employers to be able to apply for these visas. Maybe it wouldn't be so expensive for employers to do this. But the way the system is now, it's just not conducive.
What does that look like to you? What does immigration reform look like in your best view of the world?
You know, so I'm an immigration lawyer, right? Of course, immigration for me looks like the people are here. If they've been here for more than a two-year period, let's give them this path to citizenship that I've heard, right? I wasn't opposed to the bill that had passed in the Senate under the Group of Eight, and I don't know who they are at this moment because I don't recall their names, but I wasn't opposed to that bill. That bill had a path to citizenship, right? People first needed to have done their taxes for a period of time, and then they'd get employment authorization so that they could work here legally, and then they needed to learn English, and then, you know, then they would get their green card, and then after 10 years they'd get their citizenship. I'm okay with that. And I think if you ask the undocumented population, they would be thrilled with that.
And what do you think about that, Mayor? I mean, you were just on the phone with mayors across the country. You're looking at solving these problems on your own, maybe as a group of cities. But what would you look for from the federal government? What would you hope to have?
I agree with Professor Gonzalez. And one thing that you didn't mention, you know, throughout that process, you also have to stay out of trouble.
Yes.
You have to stay out of trouble. And so, you know, the pathway to citizenship for folks who are doing everything right. And we were chatting earlier about you know, talking with mayors throughout the country. And what we're looking to do is amplify each other's voice. You know, there's a lot of appetite, you know, among the mayors and among our cities to do more on immigration at a national level. And there's a lot that we've been doing locally in our home communities, but it's a very different message than if we're coordinating. We're amplifying each other's voice, and now we're making it a national conversation, because I really do think that we can win this narrative on immigration at the national level. You know, the public safety conversation, you know, we have police chiefs from the entire country that have stood up and said, you know, this doesn't make our cities any safer. If anything, it makes it more difficult to police in our cities. We also have education professionals that have talked about some of the inhumanity of separating families. No, none of us stand for that. And so, you know, we want to amplify their voices and get that message out there. We also have leaders in the faith community, and they've been great leaders, and they've been strong advocates in this space. in keeping with their values and, frankly, with their legacy and history of protecting the most vulnerable, you know, they also have an important voice here. And so as mayors throughout the country, at the end of this month, in a couple of weeks, we're going to hold a National Immigration Day of Action. It'll be the first of a series where we're coordinating our actions, amplifying the voice of these important stakeholders, and making sure that we're driving this message home at a national level, because we can't cede ground on this public safety discussion. If anything, the public safety conversation is on our side. It's just a matter of getting the message out there.
Commissioner, the mayor just said on the process that he's looking for, people need to stay out of trouble. Is staying out of trouble to you not getting a DUI? You know, something that is in many ways a low-level offense, in many ways something that maybe shouldn't get you sent back to another country, but it's also a very serious crime and could have very serious consequences. I mean, what do you think about that? What is staying out of trouble in your mind?
Yeah, that's where Congress has to make decisions on what behavior is allowable and what is not. And so petty crime, we don't do anything with people that are here on petty crimes.
What about DUIs, just specifically?
DUIs should not result in your deportation.
If I may, they in fact don't. And as an immigration lawyer, I believe they should.
Mm.
I have to speak honestly because I too am a citizen of this state, of this nation. My parents are immigrants. I am not for people coming here and raping people. I am not for the guy who's going to come here and drink and get in his car. I'm not for that. I don't want somebody to come here and traffic drugs and, you know, make this, you know, heroin epidemic. Who wants that? That's ludicrous to think that anybody who's pro-immigrant wants that. But the commissioner is right? There needs to be, Congress needs to come and say, these are the actions that we don't want, right? Domestic violence, no, right? And domestic violence, by the way, is a crime that would render you deportable. A DUI is not. And I have to admit to you that sometimes I shake my head and go, what? But so they need to change that, and Congress needs to do that. But I agree that, so operating without a license in Rhode Island is no longer a crime, but it used to be. And so many people have many, more than one, convictions of operating without a license. Should somebody get deported because they drove their kid to the hospital? I don't think so.
Leanne, do you feel like you've gotten some common ground with some of your panelists in some of these things? It sounds like you and the professor are agreeing on a lot.
Well, I think that that's the whole point of this, I think, is to find some common ground. I think it's good that we are, and I think that's the only way we're going to make progress on this issue. But I also think that I agree with you about the DUIs, that should be a deportable offense, because if we looked at someone who is here legally in the country and they're committing a DUI, we want them to be prosecuted to the fullest extent, and that should include not being allowed to stay, because that's not good behavior. But also, I would like to know how you view some of the other things that come along with being in the country illegally, such as using a false social security number, perhaps voter fraud, because when you do apply for a driver's license, you can register to vote. There's no check to see if anyone is a citizen when they register to vote. So those are all things that need to be addressed at some level, not at your level, obviously, because it's a civil thing. But where do you view identity theft on that scale? Where does that come in?
Very quickly.
And this gets real complicated. So the reason I took a position on DUI, I deal with a lot of families that have lost loved ones. But it's a misdemeanor here. Let's get real. If you're an American and you get convicted of a DUI, it's a misdemeanor. So it's a petty offense. All these other things are issues that need to be thought through. And the severity of that crime. That's why we have varying levels of crime in this country.
There is clearly so much more to talk about on this very important subject, but we've run low on time. And I want to thank our guest. Stephen Perry is Commissioner, Providence Public Safety. Thank you so much, sir. Thank you very much to Leanne Senek, Rhode Island Republican National Committee Woman, Deborah Gonzalez, immigration law expert at Roger Williams University, and Jorge Elorza, the mayor of the city of Providence. A nice round of applause, please, for them. I would like to thank everyone at Providence Athenaeum for being such gracious and accommodating hosts in this beautiful space. Thanks to the general manager of RIPR, Tori Malatia, news director Elizabeth Harrison, congratulations, Elizabeth, and interim news director Kristen Gourlay, chief engineer Aaron Reed, and you've been a wonderful audience. I'm John Dankosky. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.